This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Coming up, it's the first full week of games at the London Olympics, but it's also the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. That's when observant Muslims refrain from eating or drinking from sunrise to sundown. We'll find out how the Muslim athletes at the Olympics are trying to balance the demands of competition at this elite level with the requirements of their faith. We'll have that conversation in just a few minutes. But first, we wanted to turn again to what you might call one of the sub-themes of this election year. It's an argument over the mechanics of voting, specifically whether rules governing who can vote and how are too loose or too strict. For this conversation, we're going to head to Pennsylvania, where, as in a number of other states, there are new rules requiring voters to have certain forms of ID in order to vote. And, as in these other states, there's new controversy around those rules. The story in Pennsylvania got some particular traction when Republican state lawmaker Mike Terzai said the new rules would help Governor Mitt Romney carry the state in this year's presidential election. But those rules are being contested in a lawsuit spearheaded by the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP. And the U.S. Department of Justice is looking into whether Pennsylvania's law discriminates against minorities. Joining us to talk more about this is Nathan Persily. He is a professor of law and political science at the Columbia University School of Law. He joins us now from our bureau in New York. Professor Persily, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us specifically about Pennsylvania's law, if you would. What is it that they actually require?
They require that you have a government-issued photo ID, and it's not just any photo ID, but a driver's license, a passport, a state ID that's like a driver's license, a municipal ID, a university ID, or a nursing home ID. And if you don't have one of those, you have to get one, and you have to have a birth certificate or pay to get a birth certificate in order to get one of those.
Why was this law put into place? This is relatively new legislation, which is one of the reasons why I think people are contesting it. Did the proponents of this law argue that there was a particular reason why this was needed, that there was some evidence of fraud, there was some evidence of people voting who were not eligible to vote? What was the rationale put into place?
All of these photo ID laws are justified as preventing voter impersonation fraud, the idea that someone would come in to vote pretending to be someone else.
But was there ever any evidence presented of that, any specific cases where that was demonstrated?
Not in Pennsylvania. I mean, it does happen every election that some people do vote in the name of someone else. A lot of the times it's accidental. A lot of times it's poll worker error. And sometimes it is, you know, people behaving badly. But we're talking about handfuls in states, not, you know, a mass movement to have hordes of people go from one polling place to the next trying to rig an election.
Well, the argument that people – so I'm going to ask you to take both sides of this. I mean, the argument that the proponents of this make is that whether or not it's been demonstrated that there's widespread fraud, that a voter ID, a government-issued voter ID, is a pretty simple thing to get. I mean, I have one. You probably have one. I mean, the argument is made that it's very hard to do a number of the sort of tasks of modern life without one. So why is this so difficult? So what's the argument about that?
Well, let me make that argument even stronger for the proponents, which is that virtually every country in the world has a photo ID requirement for voting. But unlike every other country in the world, we don't have a national ID card in America. We rely on people to put forth their own efforts to go to, say, a DMV and get a driver's license, et cetera. Now, they are right that most people have them, but in the litigation just yesterday, they argued that over 700,000 people in Pennsylvania who voted in 2008 don't have a photo ID. Now, they could go and get, and for some of them, it will be easy because they live not too far from a DMV, and maybe navigating that bureaucracy won't be so difficult. But for many others, they said one in four, in fact, of those 700,000 don't have the required documents, such as a birth certificate. So then they have to get a birth certificate, if they can, and then pay for it, and then use that birth certificate to get a photo ID.
So what's the argument about that? You know, how does the state respond to that?
Well, they would say that the number is much lower because some of those people will have passports or university IDs or nursing home IDs, all of which are acceptable forms of IDs. Some of those people will be able to get free IDs between now and the election, and others will were probably not actually going to vote anyway because maybe they moved out of the state or there could be other reasons that they were erroneously on the rolls. However, you're still even with all those exceptions, you're still talking about hundreds of thousands of people who probably would not have the required documentation. It is not rocket science or brain surgery to do this, but the question is, how burdensome should it be in order to vote? These are not literacy tests, and they are not explicit poll taxes in the way that they were, say, 50 years ago in the South. But it is one more hindrance that would prevent some people from turning out to vote. And more importantly, what you can expect is that on election day, a lot of people will come to the polls expecting to be able to vote and then realize that they're going to have to vote a special ballot, a provisional ballot, which won't be counted in unless they present a photo ID later.
Nathan Persily is a professor of law and political science at Columbia Law School. We're talking about a challenge to Pennsylvania's new voter ID laws. Pennsylvania is one of a number of states who have instituted new requirements for voters to present photo IDs or government-issued photo IDs at the polls, and those laws are being challenged across the country. Give an example, if you would, about a scenario that was presented in arguing against this law, about why this is considered unduly burdensome, because the supporters of it keep saying, look, you need a voter ID. You need some form of a photo ID to buy cough medicine. You need some form of a photo ID to get on an airplane. So why is this so hard?
Just to be clear, because this is a widespread example that's made, you don't need a photo ID to get on an airplane. You just are subject to enhanced security if you do. And there are all kinds of other things where we use photo IDs for these processes. But if you don't have one, then there are other ways in order to get through. But if you just look at the named plaintiff in this case that's being presented in Pennsylvania, Viviette Applewhite. So this is a woman who walked with Martin Luther King in the 1960s, who's over 90 years old, and who doesn't have a copy of her birth certificate, and she doesn't drive. Now, could she potentially get a birth certificate and go through the government machinery in order to get a photo ID? Probably. It would take some effort. And the question is, well, how much effort should a person have to go through and expend in order to get a photo ID in order to vote?
Well, one of the arguments, though, is that this is racially discriminatory. And the arguments that some people make here is that, for example, to get a college ID, you have to be in college. Well, it's the suggestion made that if you are not in college, that you should not be able to vote. The other argument that some people are making is that a number of people, particularly African Americans of a certain age, were not born in hospitals, and it was not deemed important to record their births by any government entity. So that being the case, is that a credible argument?
That's what the DOJ is investigating. To what extent is there a disparate racial impact, to use the civil rights language here, from a law like this? And in some states, we find that there is. I want to caution people, though, on assuming that there's going to be widespread disenfranchisement, that you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people who are not going to be able to vote. A lot of what's going to happen here is going to depend on how it's enforced in the polling place. And as I said before, the consequence of coming to vote without a photo ID is that you're supposed to be given a provisional ballot, a ballot that will be counted if you can sort of cure the legal defect later. And so we shouldn't expect that there's going to be a huge impact on turnout, but it could cause some real conflict at the polls between poll workers and voters. And so it's true. It may be true. We'll see that it's going to have a racially discriminatory impact. When Indiana passed its photo ID law prior to the 2006 and 2008 election, they didn't find that it had a huge racially disparate impact. But a lot of that is because Obama was on the ballot. There was increased black turnout. And so it's hard to predict these things. All that can be said right now, the analysis that one goes through is to look at the race of the people who are in the sort of non-photo ID population. They tend to be – the minorities are overrepresented in that population, as are elderly voters and people who don't have cars, because driver's license is the most likely form of ID that people would bring to the polls.
Professor Persily, important to point out that Pennsylvania's law is being challenged at the state level. On what grounds?
Well, the state constitution in Pennsylvania has a voting rights provision so that the right to vote is protected explicitly in the Pennsylvania Constitution. The reason they're bringing this in state court instead of federal court is because the U.S. Supreme Court about 5 years ago upheld a voter ID law in Indiana. And they said that under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, that voting ID laws, photo ID laws, in fact, could be constitutional. And so if you're a clever lawyer, you say, well, if I'm not likely to win under the federal constitution, I'll go and argue under the state constitution, thinking that maybe the state courts might be more favorable. And so that's what they're arguing, that this is a burden that breaks the state constitutional guarantee of the right to vote.
But one of the reasons that this particular case stands out, and I think has come to the attention of people looking at this nationally, is that Pennsylvania is not one of the states that has to review its voting mechanisms in advance with the federal government, as a number of southern states do, owing to a record of past discrimination. And is that a point in their favor? Is their argument that, you know, we don't have a history of discrimination, therefore we shouldn't be subjected to this kind of scrutiny? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, this makes it more likely that they're going to win in court. The Texas case, which is currently before the three-judge special court in Washington, D.C., has a different posture because in Texas, Texas has to prove that its voter ID law will not disadvantage minorities. So the burden is on them to show that there is no racially disparate impact. Whereas here, the burden is on the plaintiffs, on the ACLU, to say it is, in fact, going to have a racially disparate impact. And while that legal difference might seem like standing angels on the head of a pin, it really can make all the difference in the world. Because if the state of Texas says, look, no one has proven that this has a racially disparate impact, that's not enough. And that looks like what's going to happen in Texas, where the court is going to strike down that law. In Pennsylvania, it's more difficult. The racial argument there is going to require, if you're making a constitutional argument, that they were intentionally trying to go after racial minorities. And under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it's still going to be difficult because you have to really know who's going to end up voting and not being able to vote on Election Day because of this.
Nathan Persily is professor of law and political science at Columbia Law School, and he was kind enough to join us from our bureau in New York. Professor Persily, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.